Hey there, listeners. It's Nathan. Real quick, before we start the show today, we have got a special episode for you. I know, they're all special, but this one is a live recording that we did on August 2nd of 2023 in Minneapolis. Leadership Vision hosted an event. We called it Leadership Vision Connect. It was kind of the first ever event like this, where it was part professional development, part networking, part live podcast recording, and just a really fun couple of hours where we brought together a bunch of leaders from different walks of life, different backgrounds, different companies, different experience levels, different, just all kinds of diversity in this group. And we talked about collaboration. We talked about what it meant, some of our preferences. It was really a small little snippet of what we do with our clients. And what you're about to hear is a recording that I did with Jeff Brown, who you'll get to meet in a moment, and talked about collaboration, talked a little bit about his illustrious career. As you'll hear, he's been around for a few minutes, and I'm just really excited to share this with you and would love any and all feedback. You can send it to me, Nathan@leadershipvisionconsulting.com. I would love to know, one, if you like this sort of format, two, if you'd like to hear more of it, and obviously, what questions do you wish I would have asked Jeff, knowing a little bit more about him. So here it is, a live podcast interview about collaboration with Jeffrey Brown. Enjoy. Okay, you ready? All right. You are listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, our show helping you build positive team culture. Our consulting firm has spent 25 years investing in teams so that people are mentally engaged and emotionally healthy. Hello, everyone. My name is Nathan Freeberg. I am your host, and I am so excited to be here in Minneapolis doing this live. Yeah. Fantastic. I think we have over 200 podcast episodes, 220 something, and this is the first one we've ever done live. So assuming I am recording, this will probably be our most listened to podcast of all time. And today I am joined by the amazing Jeff Brown.
Well, thank you for, I don't know about not so amazing, but thank you.
He is amazing because Jeff Brown is a renowned speaker and business coach, and he empowers diverse individuals to shape their desired future. With a global reach, Jeff inspires everyone from CEOs to students, athletes, entertainers, using core principles of humor and insightful questions to surmount obstacles. He was a former HAL team member back when Wham was the number one band in the country, and he is a trendsetter who has advised high-profile leaders worldwide while also championing nonprofits to spread love, happiness, and positivity. Let's welcome Jeff to the podcast, everyone.
Thanks, Nathan. I appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the bio that I wrote for you, so that's really nice. Thanks.
Oh, that's just off the top of my head. You're not supposed to share how the sausage is made.
So, but Jeff, see, it's collaboration.
Exactly.
It's all about
that's true. See, this is what we're here to talk about is collaboration from Jeff's illustrious career. And I first met Jeff maybe 13 years ago when we both had some office space down at COCO, which is a collaborative co-working space. So the roots of our relationship goes back to collaboration. And so I'm going to start with a really difficult question, just kind of get the ball rolling here. You've been collaborating for, I'm guessing, a couple years, maybe 40 plus years. Is that accurate?
Probably more than that, but that's pretty accurate.
Yep. Oh, come on. You're not that old.
Well, I'm 76 years old, and I think
Liar.
I started collaborating when I was 18. I mean, legitimately, when I was 18. So it's been a good number of years.
So it's been a minute or two.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, in all those years, can you define collaboration for us? Or maybe what is your definition of collaboration?
Well, I think collaboration is two to many people working together to try to come to the common purpose or a common goal. That's what I would call collaboration.
Right. And we were chatting the other day. It seems like one of those things that's so simple yet so important. And so what we're going to talk about here is just some of your experience, maybe some kind of best practices or things like that. What I am curious about, though, as we kind of go off of that definition, back in the early 80s when you were with Apple, and then in the 2020s now as you're advising business leaders, what are some of the maybe common threads that you've seen through the decades, through changes in technology and, you know, leadership styles and whatnot? What are some of those common threads that sort of, yeah, this is 50 plus years, this is collaboration is still the same in this way?
I think, I mean, the common thread to me is that we all collaborate all the time, every day, no matter what we're doing, and we don't even realize it. And I think, you know, when we go back to the early 80s, when I started working at Apple, I got hired there to do research. And the research I was given, and I remember this assignment like yesterday, I was told by the person that hired me at Apple that there was a gentleman that wanted to talk to me about a specific job, and it happened to be Steve Jobs. And of course, at that time, I didn't even know who Steve Jobs was. I mean, he did not have the notoriety or wasn't famous at that time. In fact, a lot of people thought that Apple was a crazy place to work at, and you shouldn't even be working there because they didn't work under normal business practices, because they did collaborate, where normal business in that time didn't collaborate so much. And so I remember walking into the room, and Steve Jobs says, I've been told that you're a good researcher, because I was hired to do research. And he says, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go figure out what the year 2000 is going to look like. My goal at Apple is to create the future and change the status quo and get people to think differently. And if we're going to do that, we have to have some semblance of what we think the future is going to look like. You're going to go do that for me. I said, I don't have the smarts to do that. And he says, you go pick a team and collaborate with them and find the people that you need within our organization and start working on this. And that's what we did. We put together a collaborative team. We went out and we came back 6 months later and described what we thought the year 2000 was going to look like. So that was my first really big business opportunity to collaborate with people and come back with a solution, or at least that. I remember that when I first said to Steve Jobs, I said, I don't know if I can do this. And he says, I wouldn't have had you hired if I didn't think you could do it. Just go figure it out. And I remember we did figure it out. So we did collaborate. We came back with an answer that satisfied him, because I couldn't be wrong. I mean, that was the great thing about that assignment. I could not be wrong. So
I'm in danger of taking this conversation off into left field. But in the early 80s, what did you think the year 2000 was going to look like? Were you in flying cars? Is that your Steve Jobs? We want flying cars.
No, you know, I had no clue what the year 2000 was going to look like, because prior to going to work at Apple, other than a few years before I started working there, I was pretty much a hippie living in Hawaii and kind of doing anything I wanted to anytime I wanted to do it. And I guess the value that I got out of being a hippie in Hawaii in those days is that I did a lot of mind-expanding things that allowed me
to...
talk
about meditation, you guys.
Meditation, yes. That allowed me to think differently kind of not worry so much about the future, but it also made me realize that I'm a change agent. That's who I am. I mean, that's what God put me on this earth to do, is help people change and accept change. And I love that role. And so when I went to Apple and became and given that assignment, it was like, great, I can go do this. And we did do it. So
you hired a team that you had to work together. How,
yep.
You're telling me on the phone that the way that you collaborated back in the Apple days was like shunned. It was like, that's ridiculous, as you're saying earlier. How did you kind of lead that team and collaborate together to basically dream up what is the future going to look like?
Well, you have to understand that the way organization worked at Apple in those days was quite different than what normal business practices were in the 80s. So the Hewlett-Packards of the world, the IBMs of the world, the other technology companies were very structured. I mean, the organization with everything from the president to the vice president, I mean, there was very archaic, in my opinion. And at Apple, what we did was that we put together projects based on a timeline. So the project that I had to figure out what the future was, we had a six-month timeline, and we could work on that. And the team that I brought together, there was two people that were within the Apple organization that I picked out that felt very comfortable in working on this project with me. And we had 6 months to get it done. And it didn't make any difference if we worked 4 hours one day and 12 hours the next day or didn't work at all. There was no real structure to how we did things. All we had to do was have a project, come up with a solution, and do it in the timeline that we were given to do it in. And that's pretty much the way that whole organization worked at that time. Other some exceptions, but I won't get into all that. But I'm sorry, I got lost. What was the question?
I was just curious.
My old white hair age. You know, I start forgetting some of these things. So.
I mean, I'm curious to know, like, how, you know, this maybe is one of, like, your first kind of big jobs. How did you sort of collaborate with that team? Maybe what was your style, and how did you sort of get these people to, you know, collaborate towards something that was so undefined? And you're, like you said, you're sort of, you couldn't fail because no one knew what the outcome was.
Right. So we sat in a room for about 2 weeks when we were in that room together, and we just started talking and getting to know each other, very similar to what we did here today at Leadership Vision. And we started understanding what our strengths were as individuals. And within that, finding that out, once we found that out, we all kind of came to a common denominator that probably the best way to figure out what the future was going to look like was to figure out if there was any common threads of innovation in the past that could be carried over into the future to try to define what the future was. So we went back and determined that the best way to do that was to study every innovation and how it affected human society from 1900 through 1980. I mean, think about that. Amazing amount of innovation and change that happened during that 80 years. We were right, though. We did find some common threads. And so as we studied all those innovations, we looked at those common threads, and I won't get into all of them, but the key one was that during the start of any major innovation that got introduced, and that didn't make any difference whether it was an automobile, radio, a TV, certain types of manufacturing, there was always one thing in common. And that was during the first 4 to 6 years of that innovation, only about 3 to 6% of the population would adapt to it or would accept it. And they were the people, like, I figure I'm a change agent. They were people like me. They were willing to try any kind of new thing, regardless of what it was. They didn't have to have somebody validate that it was good for them or not. They just did it. And then once they did that, they would articulate the value that they got from it. And that value would then get the next anywhere from probably 8 to 12% of the population to also use that innovation. During that first 3 to 6% was about a 4-year timeline. The next 6 to 12% was another 4-year timeline. And once that 12% of the population could articulate value, then they would bring in what we called the early majority, which was about 12 to 30% of the population. And once that happened, then everybody started doing it. But that timeline was very essential in what we planned at Apple, because we figured that it was about a 16-year timeline from an innovation start to an innovation acceptance by the majority of the population. And that was the case no matter what. Now, I'm going to add a little sidelight here. Nathan, what do you think innovation had the most profound effect on the population and took the longest to accept? From 1900 to 1980.
From 1900 to 1980. The washing machine?
We'll be right back.
At Leadership Vision Consulting, we have spent 23 years helping individuals explore the depth and dimension of their personal strengths and have helped hundreds of teams build positive culture. We're excited to now announce our new online membership platform that brings together the resources, community, and motivation that you need to grow your influence and build a positive team culture. Through our courses, workshops, live Q&A sessions, and more, you'll gain the skills and confidence you need to lead effectively. And with our supportive community of like-valued leaders, you'll never feel like you're doing it alone. Visit leadershipvisionconsulting.com/community to learn more.
Not quite, but it does have something to do with water.
Oh, indoor plumbing.
Indoor plumbing.
Ooh.
And specifically...
toilets.
Flushing toilets.
Oh, I got it eventually.
Yeah, flushing toilets.
I would have been an early adopter to that innovation.
Yeah, but
anybody else, I don't trust this thing.
But you think about this. In 1940, less than 50% of the households in the United States had a flushing toilet. Isn't that crazy? I mean, rural United States did not have indoor plumbing yet to that extent. They had indoor plumbing, but people still said, I don't want somebody crapping in my house. You know,
I still have that.
Yeah.
You know, I understand
it's like, take it outside. And so, but that persisted for a long period before people adopted to having indoor plumbing and flushing toilets.
And that idea is so interesting because, like we were talking about earlier, everyone has, as you all discussed, kind of unique needs and expectations around collaboration. And so you think about, you know, for some people, they're like, why would you not want a toilet in your house? Other people, as you so eloquently put it, I don't want you crapping in my house. And so when you think about like how you're trying to get diverse minds to collaborate then, what advice would you give to someone? So how do I take these people who have all kinds of different backgrounds and different ideas and different needs and expectations and get them to focus on and go in a certain direction?
Well, I think back in that time frame too, that the communication channels that we had for people were a lot different than they are today.
Carrier pigeon and Pony Express,
yeah,
or not?
Carrier pigeon, Pony Express. I mean, that there's another innovation: the telegraph, the phone, all those types of things. And so, it makes a big difference today that you can communicate an idea faster and reach more people. But the reality is, as humans, our minds still are the same, and we still don't accept change that fast. So here's a perfect example. Most people think technology can speed up how fast people adapt to new technology. What year was Google invented? When did it start?
Super close.
We had 198 answer here. It started in 1992. It didn't make its first dollar until 2003. So it took not quite the 16 years, but it took relatively 12, 13 years to get it to start working. And it wasn't until like 2005, 2006 that it started becoming prolific. So, I mean, that same concept is still working today. So, and I tell that to people because when you're thinking about collaboration in your business, we all have different emotional levels that we can adapt to quicker or not quicker. And so when you're thinking about collaborating and you're setting up your businesses today or your leadership teams today, you can't force people from an emotional standpoint to change their emotions very easy or their habits very easy. So you have to recognize the fact that your ideas may not be accepted as quickly as possible, or they may be rejected very quickly, but you can't take that as a personal thing. You have to look at the value of the team. I mean, I think business today has become more team-oriented more than ever just because of what happened with COVID and the fact that all of a sudden we weren't together. And we had to figure out ways to work together from a collaborative standpoint over technology. But now that we're able to come back together, we can see that they both work. We can have aspects of personal interaction and aspects of technology interaction. And you have to learn how to take it and put those together by understanding who your team members are and getting to, I guess what I'm trying to really emphasize here is make sure that you let your team articulate what's important to them. What's the most important thing to them? What is their expertise? What is their knowledge base? What is their experience levels? Some of the exercises that we were taking through today here at Leadership Vision were perfect because it allowed you to tell the people that you were interacting with how you got to be who you are. And you have to kind of do that as you build your teams and start working with collaboration inside your own organization.
So how
I got off the path.
Here. No, this is good. Our path is wherever we take it. We're creating the path. Yeah. So Jeff, how would you, because we hear from a lot of leaders, a lot of, you know, team leaders is I don't have time to do that. I got to get this product done. I got to get this, you know, thing across the finish line. So to take time to like sing kumbaya and come together and like really learn about all these emotions, we know it's important, but sometimes there's just not time to do it. So how, like, what would you recommend to someone who is in that position of, you know, speed, got to go, and doesn't necessarily have time? Is there a way to integrate some of that behavioral learning or understanding who those people are in the midst of collaborating and collaborating well?
So I'm going to start out with saying time is irrelevant. Time is something we make it.
He's from the future, folks.
Yeah, I'm telling you, time is something we make it. We put those deadlines on ourselves.
We don't have to be done by 11. Is that what I'm hearing?
And I would. It's kind of like the example with Google. I'm sure when Google started, they expected they'd be making money a lot faster. But then they realized that it was going to take a long time to get a database in place in order to make money off of it. Just like chat AI today. I mean, that people think that's new. They've been building that database for years. I mean, we used AI at Apple back in the 1980s. And even the HAL team that I was managing, that came from AI. That was named because of the movie 2001 Space Odyssey. HAL was the name of the computer on the space station in 2001 Space Odyssey. That movie came out in 1979. And HAL was using AI methods to be able to manage the environment inside the space station. Over time, those AI methods got the computer to learn how to have emotions. And then once he started having emotions, there were certain people he liked and certain people he didn't like. And there was the interaction between the machine and the people caused the computer to get mad and angry, which was something was only humanistic before that, but now all of a sudden the machine was doing that, and he blew up the space station because he didn't like certain people.
Spoiler alert if you haven't seen that movie yet.
I know, but what I'm saying is that we all think that there's a timeline that we have to perform something very quickly. I think it was when I was talking to V today, he wants to ramp up his business very quickly. I emphasize with him that if he tries to go too quick, he'll fail. For the most part, if you see, I mean, businesses in the United States, especially new businesses, fail much faster than they do succeed. And it's because people try to move too fast. If you put the time to understand your team and manage your team correctly, the potential for success and financial gain is significantly greater. I don't know if we have time to get into all that, but I have a lot of detail on that, but we can...
That's for next time. Does anyone have any questions out here? I've got a few more, but I want to be aware of time. Yes, Anne. Ooh, so the question is, how do you see the future of AI as it's been evolving? And I would add, like, how does collaboration impact that? Because I know that a lot of, well, I use ChatGPT for things that then we, you know, bounce back and forth. So how do you see that impacting collaboration? And is that essentially your question, Anne? Yeah.
You know, it's like going back to 1980. What's the year 2000 going to look like? I don't know. I'd have to play around and do some studies again and try to come up with a new model on how to model that. I believe that we will find that AI will find its relevance for certain types of things. But as humans, we aren't going to change a whole lot. I mean, we were created to be who we are and what we are. And we always think that this kinds of new technologies are going to influence us to a greater level than they do. We will find things that are useful for using AI that will benefit us as a society. And that, but there will also be the element of society that uses AI to create evil. So, I mean, we don't know where that's all going to go yet. But I think that one of my strengths from Strength Finders is positivity. So I believe that we're going to use it to the good of helping humanity. And I think it's going to be incredibly useful in medical research and finding cures for this and that. And we're going to apply it to the best of who we are as a society, even though our society is who knows? Some of us think it's good. Some of us think it's bad. I mean, again, it's all part of who we are as humans, how we view things and accept things. But we're going to find a way to make it good. I hope. You know, that's my positive view.
Kind of going off of that, one theme I heard from several groups, and someone shared this out loud as not liking it, but the idea of virtual collaboration. You know, when you think about AI, you think of various tools. How do you see this virtual world where people are in the office 3 days and out 2 days or whatever it is? How do you see, or what are some of the best, I don't want to say tips and tricks, but advice that you might share about how to make a virtual team exist? I mean, raise your hand if you're a fractional something or other in here. Several of you are, a few of you left. That's kind of like what you do, right? On a regular basis. So what maybe advice would you give to that? I mean, we're all probably virtual in some capacity.
Okay. How many of us want to go back to strictly virtual? Anybody? I don't think
just,
so.
Just Heather, I think.
I mean,
you can go sit outside. Go sit in your car on your phone then. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about the rest of you or the people out there in our podcast audience, but hugging a computer doesn't feel nearly as good as hugging somebody else. If we can't have that human connection of touch, which is part of who we are as people, I don't think we're going to gain as much value in the future. And so I think businesses, at least the ones that I've been working with, and most of the ones that I currently work with are relatively small. They're, you know, probably $5 million or less and 30 people or less. It's very evident to me that those businesses are getting closer to being more connected personally than they ever did virtually, and it's helping them succeed and do better business. So I'm all for touch instead of just being on a screen. So,
touch is great.
Yeah.
We have about 5 minutes left, I think. Sorry. And now for the awkward transition. We have about five more minutes left. Any other questions before I have? Yes, Cameron.
You mentioned earlier that...
So to rephrase, just for our podcast audience, how do you make people aware that they are collaborating? Essentially is a question. And like, we're going to work on this together now, and I'm not just telling you what to do or vice versa. Okay. That makes sense.
Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, I think we all collaborate every day, whether we know it or not. We just don't define it, and we don't define the roles. And I think that integral part of what's going on today is changing that and adding a very strong element of intercommunication to the collaboration. Because a lot of times people who are collaborating are also getting it mixed up with cooperation. And there is a difference between collaboration and cooperation. And when you start looking at what you're doing from a collaborating standpoint, and if whether it's family or a team at a business, whatever it is, make sure you start defining the roles of that collaboration. Because we all have different strengths. We all have different knowledge. We all have different experiences. If you take all those elements together and then categorize that, okay, Jane has these capabilities, Bob has this, Jeff has this, and you make that part of the communication of the team or the family, they start growing into the habit of understanding where they play and don't feel bad if they're not included in certain things or if what they're doing or what their strength is or knowledge base or how they're learning is different than their siblings or their team members, they don't feel bad about it. And if you can start working on getting the emotional side out of it, emotions are really important, but if you can manage those emotions, then you're going to get ahead of the game, whether it's family or business.
So it's people understanding their role and their responsibilities in a collaborative environment. So if the kids are wondering why you're not involving them in family taxes, it's like, well, it's not your job. Or whatever.
No, talk about it.
Yeah, just talk about it. Maybe don't shut them up.
Find out. Ask them what they're feeling. Ask them why they feel this way, or what would they do to be more included if they're not feeling included. Let them help make their own decisions, because none of us like being told what to do. I don't care where you are in the spectrum of knowledge or understanding
hierarchy.
Or hierarchy or whatever. We don't like being told what to do because we always think our thoughts are the best. So ask them to tell themselves, how can I be more included? Help them build their own roadmap. That's all.
Good question. My assistant tells me I had two other questions. Jamie, did you have your hand raised? Would you like to ask your question?
You were just talking about...
What is a trend over time that's helped leaders gain fulfillment and purpose? Is that... That's a great question.
And there is no answer. It's such a there's such a great question. There's no answer because I don't think there's any one solution. You know, there's every aspect.
What are some of your favorites, though? Like, if you had to pick anything that you've seen, it's like
bourbon.
That's a trend over many, many years.
Yeah, bourbon, craft beer. I mean, all these things that we kind of indulge ourselves in help us get through those kinds of things. I don't know if there. I don't know if I can single out any one answer. We're all individuals, and there's not one thing that affects us all as a society. There's just so many different things. So it's hard for me because as a change agent, I don't focus on that stuff. I just focus on change all the time. If I don't have some kind of change every day, I feel bad. So, you know, it's hard for me to segment that. So I'm sorry, that's an answer that you just totally stumped me, and I appreciate that.
Does anybody have an answer to that? I am curious of what trends or things that, you know, maybe especially during the last 3 or 4 years of COVID, anyone has found is like, wow, this is actually something that's leading more, I don't know, fulfillment or job satisfaction or, I don't know, even work-life balance. Yes, Dana. Okay, so the audio here was really hard to hear. I could even barely hear it listening back on my headphones. But one of the participants essentially shared strengths, learning your strengths, knowing your strengths, understanding your strengths, and trying to figure out how to live out of those most often. But the next question here, you actually can hear and make out pretty well. And so I'm just going to let that one play as is and then listen to Jeff's reply. Okay, back to the interview. Cesar had a question.
Yeah, it's tied to just the posture in which you have. I wrote down a business profit as you were speaking and just thinking about how you're committed to change. I have futuristic strategic ideation, so I live in a reality that doesn't exist yet. And so part of this is a question, part of it is what I've seen during COVID. The discovery I saw is that we're connected, whether it's our breath, and that's how it started. Our breathing affects people. Our actions affect the planet. When we stopped moving, the earth changed. How we treat other people changed because we were focused on that in May of 2020. And so I just think there's so much clarity that came to my mind during COVID because I saw the connectedness was human, not technological. But then it also illuminated some blind spots. So the question I want to ask in that is, what did you see personally that you saw connection that maybe other people might not have seen? I'd just love to hear your wisdom on what did you learn during that time?
It's a good question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I don't know if I can pinpoint it just to COVID. I think COVID maybe extenuated what I already believed, that as a society and as human beings anywhere in this planet and anywhere in this world, if all of us could just love each other as much as we hate each other, it would just be a better world.
Maybe a little more. I would advocate love a little more.
I would love a little more. I mean, love is so important in taking care of each other, no matter who we are. We should all love each other and get rid of this hate. It's hard to do because I could get into a whole religious philosophical thing here, but I won't. So if we can just learn to, you know, love and live together, what a great society would be. It's tough to do, but boy, would it be cool.
Well, and maybe my last question for you is kind of going off of that, but I think Richard maybe shared this or someone in one of the discussions is to recognize, even in this group, just the commonalities about how we collaborate across businesses, across sectors, across everything. And so I'm wondering, why is that important to remember? Maybe kind of phrase this as some closing advice. And how might that, going back to your loving each other and the commonalities, how might that idea of recognizing that we do all share this common humanity, how might that help us be better collaborators for ourselves, for our businesses, our nonprofits, and ultimately our communities and our world?
Kill your ego. You know, we all think that we're right all the time. We all think that we have the best ideas all the time. The older I get and the whiter my hair gets, the more I understand that the more I learn and the more I allow other people to teach me and I learn from them, that the collaboration just becomes more natural. So I've, you know, personally, I've tried to keep my ego out of it. I try to stuff it in my shoe or something. I just, you know, it's hard to do, but boy, if you can, one thing I have learned, that your mind is amazing. And the habits you create in your mind are something that you can control. And if you get up every morning and you just tell your mind that your ego has no value and you get rid of it, over time it has no value and you get rid of it. And it makes you a better person. And just pretty much that simple.
Well, Jeff, thank you very much. Appreciate your insights and wisdom. Let's give Jeff a round of applause here.
Thank you, Nathan. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. This has just been awesome. So,
thank you for listening to the Leadership Vision Podcast, sharing our expertise in the discovery, practice, and implementation of a strengths-based approach to people, teams, and culture. For more resources about developing your strengths, the strengths of your team, or the strengths of your entire organization, click the link in the show notes or visit us on the web at leadershipvisionconsulting.com. And if you found value in this episode or any of our other resources, we would really appreciate it if you could subscribe to our podcast and whatever podcast app you use, join our email newsletter, follow us on Facebook and all the social medias. But more importantly, if you could share this with someone that you think would benefit from knowing their strengths better, from maximizing the strengths of their team, or implementing a strengths-based approach in their entire organization. I'm Nathan Freeberg, and on behalf of our entire team, thanks for listening.
You know, one thing that popped in my head that maybe be an answer to that question that Jamie asked. One of the things that I've learned and I help try to teach the companies that I'm coaching is that you're better off learning to listen to learn than listening to reply. Most of us listen to reply. We're already formulating an answer before we hear the whole question or before we hear what the other person is saying. So learn to listen to the whole question or the whole conversation and then learn from it rather than trying to figure out a way to reply to it. Just an idea. Thank you.